For Piedmont Arts, I'm Rachel Stewart. About 25 years ago, James Mina's agent told him he should consider a job in Charlotte, a place he knew almost nothing about.
The first thing I asked was, where is that? Went on the map and took a look. And I said, you know, why would I come here? And he said, well, look at the way Charlotte is growing. And I will never forget this. He said, look at the NFL model. If the NFL thinks that Charlotte is a place to invest a new team in, then it's got something going for it.
After that conversation with his agent and some careful consideration, James Mina arrived in the Queen City to lead Opera Carolina. He became one of the longest serving and most influential artistic leaders in our region. But now he's moving on, so we've got a conversation with him on this episode of Piedmont Arts. Also on this episode, the new fanfare segment with Phil Vavra, who fills us in on things we can do throughout the region in coming days, including a production at Night Theater and some details about Merlefest. I'll also fill you in on the newly announced 25-26 season for Opera Carolina. James Mina's tenure as Opera Carolina's artistic director and principal conductor came to an end this past weekend. Mina was on the podium one last time in his current role, leading the production of La Boheme. In his time at Opera Carolina, Mina has seen the company enjoy great success and growth, but he's also had to help it navigate some very challenging times, like the 2008 financial crisis. He's seen a lot, and he's done a lot. And recently, he sat down with WDAV's Frank Dominguez to reminisce about his career in Charlotte and the changes he's seen both at Opera Carolina and in Charlotte's art community.
Well, the company is finishing its 75th year. You know, 75 is a number, but it really is only important when you compare it to the longevity of other opera companies. First things people should know is there are fewer than 150 professional opera companies in the United States. And again, that's a number that doesn't really mean anything unless you compare it to the more than 2,000 symphony orchestras and the more than 35,000 museums. So it's a pretty important piece of the cultural landscape here in Charlotte that several cities simply don't have. Opera Carolina is one of the oldest opera companies in the Southeast. We're twice as old as Atlanta.
Wow.
We're twice as old as Miami.
How about that?
And much older than Memphis and Nashville's opera companies. That's really speaks to the character of the people here. Shortly before Opera Carolina was established, we had the Symphony Orchestra and the Mint Museum. Those three pieces then, the Opera, the Symphony, and the Mint, were the cornerstone arts institutions for decades here. So it is a significant part of the cultural landscape that most people don't really know about because, you know, for a lot of people, opera is a four-letter word. And so they're reticent to even try it. And, you know, it's one of those things that they react to, well, that's really not for me. Well, how do you know if you've never gone to a La Boheme or gone to hear a Carmen or experienced it? So Opera Carolina is a valued part of this community.
Now, what were you doing prior to coming to Opera Carolina, and what made you want to come to Charlotte?
I was at that time the general director and principal conductor of the opera company in Toledo. I was the resident conductor of the symphony in Toledo, and I was one of the house conductors at the ballet in Cleveland.
Now, what were your goals when you first took the reins of Opera Carolina? What were you hoping to achieve?
Yeah, Frank, so my charge after meeting with the board was to build the company up artistically more than anything. There were some really fabulous people on the board, and they felt that the company was underperforming artistically, quality of the artistic product.
So did you have any artistic goals then that you felt empowered to be able to bring about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I shifted some money around so we could pay artists a higher fee. You know, the way things work in the opera world, singers are paid on a per-performance basis. And, of course, people at the Met and at La Scala get the highest fees. And so in those first handful of years, I was able to bring a lot of artists from the Met to perform on our stage. including Denise Graves, including Vivica Jeannot, who was just fantastic, and my good friend Marcello Giordani. And I wanted early on, we had a couple of interesting big projects that I wanted to make a statement with. The first was Cold Sassy Tree, this commission from South Carolina native son Carlisle Floyd, based on the marvelous book. And we were in partnership with Houston, San Diego, Baltimore, Seattle, a handful of really big companies to pull off this project of Cold Sassy Tree. And the season, I think right before, my memory is a little vague on it. It was either right before or right after Cold Sassy, which was 2003, we did Der Rosenkavalier. And it was important, I felt, to make an artistic statement that, yes, Opera Carolina may be considered a regional opera company, but we were the mouse that roared. And pulling off a project like Der Rosenkavalier made that statement. And we were on a very good trajectory up until the financial crisis of 2008-2009, which reset everything.
And how did you find yourself facing that crisis? What steps did the organization have to take to get through that?
The financial crisis was like nothing I'd ever seen. People think COVID was bad. We at least had the safety net of federal funding to help us get through COVID. Mm-hmm. The financial crisis, essentially 2009-2010, was the worst thing I had ever experienced as an administrator. Funding just completely dried up. People stopped going to the theater. Funding from the ASC was cut significantly. Corporate philanthropy just backed away. And I told the board we need to completely reset, at least in the short term. That season, we were supposed to do the U.S. premiere of a new opera I had conducted in Canada called The Transit of Venus. And I had to cancel it because of the financial crisis. Oh. And we were also supposed to perform Verdi's Otello that year, my favorite opera. And I had to push that, reduce it to one performance and push it to the spring. Had to lose three staff members, completely gutted all of our education programs because the money from the county for education stopped. You know, it was draconian what we had to do to survive, but we survived.
How about artistically? You mentioned some of the highlights like the commission and such, but are there other things? I think of so many of the projects that I've found a lot of pleasure in were live broadcasts. We did a Faust, and, mm-hmm. and when we were in the position of recording World of Opera for NPR, we had Margaret Garner that you premiered with Denise Graves. Not premiered it, but you had Denise Graves and Margaret Garner, and we got to give that a national platform. So how about other works that represented highlights for you?
Frank, I've got a really nice shopping list of productions that that I'm very proud of. Certainly, as I said, Cold Sassy Tree was one of them. Margaret Garner was a high point, and that was a collaboration with three other companies, Detroit, Cincinnati. But they, for some reason, they couldn't, neither of those companies could convince Richard Danielpour, the composer, to record the piece.
Mm-hmm.
I convinced Richard that we should record it for World of Opera. I think I'm probably the only person that has a recording of Margaret Garner, which I told Denise this, and she said, oh, I want to get a copy of it. Well, I said, well, ask Richard. I'm not sure I'm going to do that. And we also recorded Trovatore for World of Opera and a Faust, as you had mentioned. We recorded Eugene Onegin, but for some reason, I think that was during the transition. It never got broadcast. So you know, a lot of productions that we've done have been not just new works. Certainly, I think one of the new works that I'm most proud of is I Dream, which was a tremendous undertaking sponsored by Novant Health and sponsored by the Hearst Foundations in New York. And I created that in collaboration with my other two companies in Grand Rapids and Toledo. And it was as much a labor of love as anything, because I felt, first of all, the subject was very timely. We premiered I Dream on the anniversary of Dr. King's death. and it was monumental. That was 2018, and then we revived it in 2021 because Douglas wanted to make some changes, which is great. And it was also, surprisingly enough, a financial windfall for Opera Carolina. But the more important thing with I Dream was, I think, and this is just my own opinion, it sent a very clear message to the African-American artists in our region that Opera Carolina wanted them to become part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Because the majority of the cast is African-American. We did a lot of recruiting, a lot of auditioning. And from that experience, even today, you know, the performing company at Opera Carolina is probably 30% diverse. I don't think that would have happened without I Dream. A lot of really fun projects that we put on the stage. I remember La Vida Breve,
which I remember, one of
my favorite projects. What a fabulous, fabulous piece. Manuel de Falla. And of course, as I mentioned, Der Rosenkavalier, Fidelio, The Flying Dutchman, a lot of works that had not been on the stage. La Fanciulla del West, some of my collaborations with New York City Opera, the American premiere of Aleko of Rachmaninoff, which people were scratching their head going, why are we doing this? You know, I said, because it's a fabulous piece and we're also taking it to New York. So a lot of really good productions that I'm proud of, Frank. And I think the legacy speaks for itself, trying to move the dime or move the needle for repertoire without divorcing ourselves from the core that people expect to hear La Traviata, Bohème, and Carmen. And I think you can do both. It doesn't have to be an either-or proposition.
And we've experienced something similar at WDAV, that as we remain committed to the core repertory and play it a lot, mm-hmm. and play it often, but we're also, in our efforts to diversify the playlist, as you might say,
yeah.
we're getting a lot of variety in there that we didn't have before, and people are noticing that and appreciating that.
Yep. I was listening to the radio, which I do often. I mean, I don't scan. My radio is always set to WDAV, and hearing the Silk Road Quartet ensemble playing, I never heard of these guys, and just fabulous. Fabulous stuff.
So, well, thank you.
And that's just one example of many. The programming and the innovative programming. And you're right, we're still going to be hearing the classics, as you will. And that's exactly the right mix. It's exactly the right blend, if you will.
Now, what do you see for the future, not only for Opera Carolina, but for regional opera companies in the United States in general?
It's been interesting, Frank. You know, and not to disparage anybody, but when someone says to me, well, we need to do more new works because new works will save opera, I say, look, if that was the case, opera would have been saved by now because we've been doing new works since the 50s. Too many companies, I think, make the mistake of what I alluded to, thinking it's an either-or proposition, and it's not. We need to continue to present the great classics to new audiences while at the same time moving the needle. We need to consider ourselves very much the way museums do. We have a responsibility to preserve and advance, not either or.
What's next for Jim Mina? Are you going to be remaining in the area or are you headed elsewhere? What are the plans for you?
I really haven't decided, Frank, to tell you the truth. My youngest daughter lives here with her husband, and so that's a bit of a pull. But, I'm getting calls and requests to do things, and as a guest conductor mostly. And I'm not quite sure if I'm going to stay in the area or not. I'll probably figure that out by the fall. You know, right now I'm enjoying taking care of my hibiscus on my deck still working with some of the artists who are here in Charlotte, who I've fortunately had the pleasure to mentor for the last 10, 15 years. So, yeah, I can say very clearly, you know, I'm not retiring. I have no intention of retiring. Thankfully, I'm in very good health and able to continue to work for as long as there's something that interests me.
We're recording this prior to the run of La Boheme. So what are your thoughts going into those final performances of you as artistic director of the company, a principal conductor?
Well, you know, Frank, it's going to be, I think, a celebration in a way and also a farewell. I'm really pleased the cast is, the majority of the cast are members of the resident company, that program that I started a handful of years ago. And even the Carmen, you know, the Carmen had the majority of the cast were members of the resident company. Jonathan Kaufman, who sang John Jose, I mean, and sang it beautifully. You know, in the Boheme, Melinda Whittington, who lives up here in Huntersville, is the Mimi. Christian Blackburn, who's part of the resident company, Ramel Brooks, part of the resident company, Corey Lovelace and Zach Hugo are all members of the resident company, are starring in this production. So it'll be fun because most of them I already had mentored and worked with. So in the way we're going to be performing will be very great. And the cast is excellent. Of course, I get to conduct my friends at the Charlotte Symphony, which is always a joy. So, yeah, I mean, maybe a bittersweet departure, but, you know, it'll be a very positive way to end a tenure.
James Mina, until recently the artistic director and principal conductor of Opera Carolina, a role he had for 25 years. He was talking with WDAV's Frank Dominguez. In just a moment, I'll fill you in on what's in store next season with Opera Carolina. But first, Phil Vavra has some ideas about interesting things to do in our area.
Thanks, Rachel. Since we're still in the middle of sneezing season, I've been looking for events and activities we can enjoy indoors where the air is filtered and the pollen can't get us. Let's start with some teen angst, Broadway style. Winner of 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Kimberly Akimbo has come to Charlotte's Knight Theater as part of the Blumenthal Performing Arts PNC Broadway Lights series. It's the hilarious, heartbreaking, and inspiring story of an optimistic 16-year-old girl and how she navigates adolescence in a new town with her dysfunctional parents and a rare genetic condition. The show runs April 15th through 27th. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. Charlotte Wine and Food Week returns April 23rd through 27th. For 37 years, this event has been serving up unique wine and food pairing experiences at restaurants all over the city, as well as a chance to bid on items such as fine jewelry, a luxurious cruise, and, of course, wine. It's all to help raise money for 4 local children's charities. University of North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem has some exciting student productions this month, including Ballamore, a contemporary opera in 2 parts set in 1960s Northern Ireland, April 23rd to 27th at the Agnes DeMille Theater on campus. And the School of Dance is presenting its Spring Dance, featuring new works and reimagined classics, including a contemporary piece set to Bach's Cello Suite No. 4, April 24th through 27th at the Catawba Theater, also on campus. Now, I doubt the pollen count is any better in Charleston, South Carolina, but who cares? It's Charleston. If you're up for a low country getaway, 3 big events have aligned for 1 incredible week in the Holy City. The Charleston Jazz Festival, Charleston Cocktail Week, and Art Charleston are all taking place between April 21st and 29th. Okay, we'll have to be outside for this one, but I'm willing to suffer to hear great music. That's what allergy meds are for. One of North Carolina's biggest annual arts events, Merlefest, begins Thursday, April 24th and runs through Sunday, April 27th at Wilkes Community College in Wilkesboro. This year's lineup includes Bonnie Raitt, the Avett Brothers, and dozens of other performers. Single and multi-day tickets are available at merlefest.org. For more about those and other upcoming performances, events, and festivals, be sure to read Fanfare every week on the WDAV blog of note. It's all at WDAV.org. Rachel?
Thanks for all those great updates and suggestions, Phil, with and without pollen. To continue the updates, Opera Carolina has announced their 25-26 season, which is an ambitious lineup of grand operas, special concerts, philanthropic events, and community initiatives. They'll start with their first ever 9/11 commemorative concert in collaboration with the Mint Museum Uptown, featuring Pergolesi's Stabat Mater, and that will happen on September 11th. They've got a Puccini double bill of Gianni Schigi and Suor Angelica, January 15th through 17th, with Grammy Award-winning singer LaTanya Moore leading the cast. And Anise Graves returns to perform the title role and direct Giancarlo Menotti's The Medium, and that'll be April 17th through 19th next year. Those are just a few of the highlights. To get a full rundown of the season, check out Phil Vavra's post at our blog of note. You'll find it at wdav.org. That's it for this week's edition of Piedmont Arts. I'm Rachel Stewart. Thanks for listening.